Hey everyone, and welcome to Murder and Mysteries with Megan. If you are new here, welcome. And if you're not new here, welcome back. I'm grateful for each and every one of you that are here today. On my channel, we talk about true crime, conspiracies, hauntings, mysteries, and things of that nature. Today's case is one that took place back in 2007. This case involves 11-year-old Jody Parrick, who went missing on November 8th of 2007 while riding her bike home from a friend's house after school. In today's video, we're going to talk about how her case unfolded and also about how one volunteer had his life turned upside down after police and investigators zeroed in on him as a primary suspect. On November 8th of 2007, Jody Parrick headed out from Riverside Elementary and headed to her friend's house to go hang out for the afternoon. Jody actually had a 5:30 p.m. curfew when she had gone to different friends' houses and things like that after school. She had to be home by 5:30 p.m. So between 4:45 and 5 p.m., Jody was actually last seen at her friend's house leaving on her bicycle to head home. But Jody never returned home. And as time passed, her mother, Jody Olson, started to get a little bit worried. She began searching the area, calling friends and neighbors to see if potentially they had seen her, trying to locate Jody and bring her home. However, no one had seen the 11-year-old girl. At about 7:05 p.m. that evening, Jo Gilson called the police department to report her daughter missing. As Jo called around, different people in the area that knew her had offered to help to try to find Jody. This also included one of her longtime friends and a reserve police officer named Raymond McCann. Hours continued to pass as Jody's family, friends, and all of the volunteers were looking for her, and no one was able to find her. Now, Constantine, Michigan is a very small town. I believe there's around 2,000 different residents that live in this town. So it's a very small place. However, you know, despite that, all of the family and friends were out looking everywhere. They had checked all the different types of places that Jody was known to hang out at. And one place in particular, Raymond McCann mentioned a few different times to different volunteers and ultimately to Jody's mother. It was the cemetery. Now, Raymond McCann reportedly had suggested to volunteers that they go down to the cemetery to look for Jody Parrick because they had checked seemingly everywhere else and had nowhere else to look, and this was another location that was nearby that she could potentially be at. Since no one had checked there, around 10:30 p.m., Raymond McCann suggested it once again. Sure enough, when Jo Gilson arrived at the cemetery, she immediately saw her daughter's bike laying on the ground. Jody's mom would later say that when she saw her daughter's bicycle laying on the ground, she immediately felt as though there was something wrong. Something was off. Only moments later, Jo would go through every parent's worst nightmare. She would find her daughter lying dead on the ground, just dumped in the cemetery. We would later find out that the autopsy would reveal that Jody Parrick had been sexually assaulted and then she had died of asphyxiation. This poor 11-year-old girl who had just gone for an innocent afternoon to leave school and hang out with her friends and ride her bicycle home so that she could be in time for her curfew. She did nothing wrong. And her life was now gone. This poor girl had gone through an absolute nightmare. And then she was strangled to death. Immediately, officers' suspicions pointed towards Raymond McCann. They had zeroed in on him because he was the one who had suggested that they go look in the cemetery to find Jody. since everyone had looked everywhere else. They thought it was a little bit strange that he had suggested that people go look in the cemetery, but yet he never would go look in the cemetery and hadn't all night. So, of course, this ended up making officers question everything about Raymond McCann and about his actions on the day that Jody Parrick went missing. According to interviews that were conducted with Raymond McCann, he stated that he had been home all afternoon, that his children had got home from school. Once they had gotten home, he then went to the dollar store where he got some play toy guns, and then he returned home, made dinner, helped his children with homework, and then by around 7, 8 p.m., I believe it was, that Jody Parrick's mom came and asked for his help looking. This is the story that Raymond McCann told police officers over and over and over again in questioning. In fact, Raymond McCann was actually questioned 20 different times. And during these interviews, he denied having anything to do with Jody's disappearance or her death, or knowing that her body was in the cemetery. He actually denied having anything to do with it 86 different times. Now, of course, this was over the course of a few years that they brought him in for these interviews and for questioning. However, even though law enforcement was now focusing on Raymond McCann, there was no DNA evidence or anything at the crime scene to indicate him as the perpetrator. Whenever investigators did investigate the crime scene, they did find traces of an unknown male DNA on her body and at the crime scene. Now, despite finding different DNA evidence and Raymond McCann's alibi for the day of Jody's disappearance and ultimately her murder, police officers still continued to focus on Raymond McCann as the primary suspect. They were somehow trying to fit all of the pieces of the puzzle together, trying to make it work. But there was really no other link between Raymond McCann and Jody Parrick other than he had been a friend of the family and that he had suggested that others check the cemetery because no one had looked there yet. And that's really all. There was really nothing of substance to charge Raymond McCann with Jody Parrick's murder. At this point, it was pretty much all theories that they had as to why they thought that Raymond McCann was guilty. As I mentioned earlier, they had, over the course of a few years, questioned Raymond McCann over 20 different times. Now, during these interviews, they actually lied to Raymond McCann. They said that they had scientific evidence to prove that he had been there. Another thing was that during the evening when they were searching for Jody, police officers said that Ray McCann could not have been where he said he was because video surveillance had not picked him up. These were just a couple of the many lies that the police department and investigators did tell Raymond McCann, trying to get some sort of confession out of him that he had anything to do with Jody Parrick's disappearance and murder. Oh, and by the way, all of this lying, all of it was absolutely legal and within their parameters and rights as investigators and police officers to do so when they're investigating a murder case and trying to get a confession. So just keep that in mind. Now here we are, it's been almost seven years since Jody Parrick had died. It was April of 2014. Up to this point, no arrests had been made in connection with the murder of Jody Parrick. But that was all about to change. But maybe not in the way that you think it would change. Police still had not cracked the case wide open. They hadn't been able to make all of the pieces fit as to how it all played out, who killed Jody, and everything. But as I said, there was an arrest made. Can you guess who the arrested person was? Of course, Raymond McCann. But Raymond McCann was not charged with murder. Instead, he was actually charged with perjury and lying during a murder investigation. See, as I mentioned before, during the interrogation and the investigation and interviews with Ray, he had been so extensively lied to by police officers, so much so that he started to question things as well, especially now that here we are years down the road trying to remember every little detail from that day. In fact, in one interview, Ray even stated that it was hard to remember everything because of how long ago it had been. That he wondered if maybe he had gotten a couple of nights mixed up, that maybe he had gone to those places on another night, and that it was just all kind of running together as he was trying to remember what day things happened. They even had Ray thinking that maybe some of his DNA had actually gotten on Jody when he had grabbed Joe and pulled her off. That could have possibly happened. He also did know that, of course, he had told everybody to look in the cemetery because no one had looked there yet. However, he did admit that it did look suspicious that he had suggested a few different times to look in the very place that Jody Perrick's body was later found. At this point, Ray McCann knew that he could potentially go down for murder in this case. This was because of all the lies that police officers had told him, that his DNA was there. He suggested where to find her, and all of these things. He was terrified. But yet, police officers still didn't have enough to arrest him for murder. And because this was such a small town, and because police investigators had zeroed in on Raymond McCann, he had already lost so much. His wife had divorced him. He had lost his job at the police department. And now he was losing his freedom. He was being locked away for lying during a murder investigation. And this could potentially hold up to a life sentence in prison. So in April of 2014, Raymond McCann actually ended up taking a plea deal, which they actually took the 5 counts of perjury and knocked it down to 1. That would then allow Raymond McCann to have a sentence of anywhere from 20 months to 22 years instead of life in prison. He ended up pleading no contest and ultimately was sentenced to 20 months in jail for perjury. During that same year, after Raymond McCann had been arrested, Police Chief Jim Bedell had actually told People magazine in an interview. Whether he's the one who did it or was there when it happened, we don't know. Maybe if he sits in jail for a while, he will cooperate. Of course, Raymond McCann vehemently continued to deny the fact that he had anything to do with Jody Perrick's disappearance or her murder, and that he was not covering for anyone. He even had stated before that he would not cover for anybody, even his own family, if they had taken the life of Jody, or of anyone for that matter. See, the reason that he had taken the plea deal is he didn't want to spend that much time away from his family. He wanted to be able to get back to his family as soon as possible rather than sitting in prison for a lifetime. And he thought this plea deal and pleading no contest would ultimately allow him to do that sooner. It wasn't until over a year later that a break in the case actually happened. This was almost 8 years after the death of Jody. They finally had found the man that had taken the life of Jody Perrick so callously, so many years ago. This man's name was Daniel K. Furlong. How did they catch him? Well, in July of 2015, it seemed that once again, Daniel K. Furlong's urges got the best of him. And once again, he made the decision to prey on a young girl. This happened when a neighboring 10-year-old little girl had been passing by Daniel Furlong's home in Colonial Estates Mobile Home Park in a place called White Pigeon. He decided that he was going to take advantage of this little girl just like he had to Jody Perrick years before. He later admitted in interviews that he had asked the little girl to help him with his something in his garage. Luckily, the 10-year-old little girl screamed and was able to get away from him. Of course, her and her mother ended up reporting Daniel Furlong and what had happened to her. And ultimately, he was arrested. This was on July 28th of 2015. Once Daniel Furlong was arrested for this crime against this young girl, his DNA was taken and it was ran in the database. Once they ran his DNA in the database, ding, 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 it came back as a match to the DNA that they found on Jody Perrick's body. Finally, in August of 2015, the case that had seemingly started to go cold began to come together. They had now caught the guy who had kidnapped, brutally assaulted, and strangled Jody Perrick to death. The sad thing is that police officers actually believed that this was not the first victim of Daniel Furlong and that there were others. They believed that he could be involved with a young missing girl who was 6 years old named Brittany Beers. The man that she had been last seen speaking with when the sketch artist drew him up looked an awfully lot like Daniel Furlong. Another thing that had come to light was that Daniel had actually been looked into by police officers back in 2009. At that time, a neighboring girl who was around the same age as Jody Perrick and actually even went to the same elementary school as Jody had seen the man crouching in the bushes, watching her walking to school. She reportedly called her mother immediately and ran back home, and her mom then took her to school from that point forward and would not allow her to walk to and from or even play outside because she was so terrified of what would happen to her daughter if Daniel Furlong was around. Now, as I mentioned, police officers had questioned Daniel Furlong at this time. They had talked to him and he denied having anything to do with that he wasn't watching her. He didn't know what she was talking about, and so police officers went on their way. It makes you wonder that if police officers were not so focused on Ray McCann and that thinking that he was the one that took Jody Perrick's life, maybe they would have thought that this was suspicious behavior and that maybe they should just check his DNA and see if Daniel Furlong had anything to do with Jody Perrick's disappearance and murder. Considering the fact that the two girls had quite a few similarities, that's something you would have thought they would have done. So here we are, August of 2015, and Daniel K. Furlong has officially been charged and arrested with the kidnapping, sexual assault, and murder of Jody. Once he was arrested, Furlong admitted everything. He was incredibly cold and callous in his interview when describing what he did to Jody Perrick that fateful day. The 65-year-old Furlong was ultimately sentenced 30 to 60 years in prison, January of 2016. Only months shy of being 9 years since the death of Jody Perrick. After Daniel Furlong confessed, Jody Perrick's family was finally able to have justice served. But that's not the end of this case. Remember how Ray McCann had been arrested and put into prison for perjury during the investigation? Well, during the investigation and interrogation into Furlong, he admitted that he did not know Ray McCann. He had no knowledge of him, and he also acted alone in the death of Jody. He had stated that he actually didn't even know either of their names until he saw a news report and saw that they were focusing on Ray as a person of interest in the case. Furlong said that he thought at that point he could just let Ray McCann take the fall and that he would be free to do whatever he wanted and he could get away with it. And for years, Furlong actually did get away with it. It makes you wonder if that never happened to the other young girl that day, if police would have ever caught Daniel Furlong. It also makes you wonder if there were other victims out there of Daniel Furlong, while all the while an innocent man was sitting behind bars. So you would think this would be enough for Ray McCann to be exonerated, right? Wrong. It wasn't that simple. In fact, Ray McCann ended up serving his full 20-month sentence. He was then released on parole. It wasn't until after Ray McCann was actually released from prison and was on parole that in December of 2015, things started to change. A few months later, in March of 2016, Michigan's Innocence Clinic, along with some other attorneys, actually started working with Ray McCann to try to get him exonerated and get his name wiped clean. They started to reinvestigate the case and all of the charges and claims that had been brought against Ray McCann during the time that he was being questioned and interrogated. Well, upon research, they found two very important findings that proved that there was actually no evidence that Ray McCann had lied at all. See, it was impossible that if Ray McCann's car had been where he stated it had been the night he had been out searching for Jody, officers couldn't prove that he wasn't there. Because the surveillance camera that was out there was not pointed in the direction where Ray McCann said he had been parked. And also, even if it had been pointed in that direction, it was so dark and would have been far enough away that you could not determine who was there or what they were driving. These two different findings actually proved that Ray McCann was not lying. So they went to court and Ray McCann was ultimately exonerated, finally, on December 7th of 2017. He was also awarded $40,000. In an interview with one of the attorneys that was working on his case, who also worked on Making a Murderer on Netflix, stated, "This was one of the worst cases of police tunnel vision that I have ever seen." Speaking in regards to Jody Parrick's case and how they handled everything and zoning in on Ray McCann. Well, everyone, that is the end of today's case. Quite a crazy one, isn't it? A young girl was murdered by an absolute monster who ended up letting an innocent man take the blame for it. I'm just grateful that Jody Parrick finally now has some justice and that her killer is finally behind bars. What are your thoughts on this one? Do you think that police officers did the best that they could in the situation that was there? Or do you think that with all the leads and the tips and the pressure that the police officers were feeling to solve this case, that they ultimately were trying to find one way or another to make Ray McCann fit? Do you think that if that other little girl that Daniel Furlong had attacked that ultimately ended up reporting him and causing him to be arrested, do you think that if she never got free that police officers would have ever caught Daniel Furlong in connection with this case with Jody Parrick? Or do you think the case would still be unsolved to this day? I can't wait to hear your thoughts in the comments below on this one. It was definitely a roller coaster researching this one for sure. Anyways, I hope that you all have a wonderful and safe week. Make sure to hit that subscribe button and that post notification bell before you leave. And until next time, my mystery lovers, bye.